Introduction. Worldwide, there are about 300 million persons trying to start about 150 million businesses at any given time. About one-third will be launched, so you can assume 50 million new firm births per year, or about 137,000 per day. That's right. About 6,000 new companies start every hour of every day, year after year, according to research compiled by the late research consultant Moya K. Mason. She then goes on to note that firm birth and death rates are about equal, with roughly 120,000 active firms terminating trading each day. And it's not getting any better, even for more established firms. 440 firms that were listed within the Fortune 500 in 1955 have been replaced as of 2017. According to Credit Suisse, the average age of an S&P 500 company is fewer than 20 years, down from 60 years in the 1950s. So many new businesses begin, yet so few remain in the short term, or the long run. No doubt their founders all started out with hopeful visions of success, yet they faltered. It's time to take a step back and ask, what's going on? This is what I do every day in my work as a business coach, because what I've found is that no one talks about what really works. They talk about what's worked for them, which is almost always a unique situation. They rely on conventional wisdom or their own intuition. With this book, I want to introduce you to what's worked across thousands of businesses over a long period of time. Few business owners and leaders know the rare things that exceptional companies consistently do well and that have been proven to be effective. The lessons aren't taught in business school. They're seldom shared among leaders. This creates a mismatch between what science knows and what business does. The problems that plague businesses aren't felt only by founders and leaders. They extend to the whole workforce. According to Gallup and Research and Survey Consortium Mayflower Group, more than half of our team members are disengaged, too many actively. Can you imagine relying on dozens, hundreds, or thousands of disengaged people to help make your business a success? This is where many companies are at today. Why do people show up at work, and for that matter in life, this way? Because it's what we were taught by our parents, peers, teachers, and other influencers. Author and Harvard professor Amy Edmondson offers this explanation. It turns out that no one wakes up in the morning, jumps out of bed, and says, "I can't wait to get to work today to look ignorant, incompetent, intrusive, or negative." On average, we prefer to look smart, helpful, and positive. The good news, bad news about all this is that it's very easy to manage. Don't want to look ignorant? Don't ask questions. Don't want to look incompetent? Don't admit your weakness or mistake. Don't want to look intrusive? Don't offer ideas. And if you don't want to look negative, by all means, don't criticize the status quo. We're taught to go with the flow from an early age, and by the time we become adults, we've perfected the behavior. Simon Sinek, renowned author, motivational speaker, and marketing consultant, calls this our second job at work, the job of lying, hiding, and faking in order to feel safe. And it's killing productivity on many levels, virtually destroying any chance of taking a business further, faster. How did we get here? No entrepreneur starts out this way. Think back to when you made the decision to start your business. Maybe you were tired of working for someone else. Maybe you got sick of settling for mediocrity and thought you could do better calling all the shots. Something drove you to cut the employee cord and risk a lot on your own skills. You must have felt strongly about what you wanted to bring to the world and had a lot of confidence in your abilities and potential. Think back to what being a business owner was like then versus what it's like for you now. When you start a business, it's just you and maybe a couple of other people. So you care about only a few things and focus on just three constituencies. One, your employees. Two, your customers. And three, your market. You're very close to those constituencies. You hire and train and sit with these people, answer the phone, and close the deals. You go to conferences and network with people to see where the industry's going and what the market's doing. You do all those things to get your business off the ground. And guess what? It works. After a year or so, you've got a real business, and it grows. But as your business grows, you start to move away from those constituencies. Someone else is doing all the hiring, and they're not always making the best choices. Since you don't deal with employee issues anymore, people who shouldn't be there linger on. You don't know what's going on with your customers either, because you have salespeople, customer support people, and tech support people for that. And they don't tell you everything. Your marketing people attend the conferences for you and report back, telling you what they think you want to know about what they saw and heard. You're that person in the office who no one wants to disturb or upset. You don't have the kind of information you used to get when you started the company, and most of what you do get is secondhand. You seldom get bad news, and you have to wonder if everything's really going that well, or if people aren't telling you everything. So, if you're not paying attention to your employees, customers, and the market, what are you paying attention to? Your calendar must be empty. Except it's not. Because the bigger you get, the more you take on that doesn't really matter. You get involved in the decisions that aren't going to save your business. Never mind grow it. If you don't believe me, take a look at your calendar right now. Look at how you're spending your week. Are you guiding the most important decisions that will grow your business, or filling your time with things that don't matter? When your job is to grow the business, pretty much anything that doesn't contribute to that doesn't matter. That includes chasing revenue, by the way. Do I have your attention yet? Mind reader. I look forward to the day when entrepreneurs and business owners do their jobs differently. I want them to spring out of bed every morning, eager to make a difference in the lives of their raving fans, their customers. I want them to end each workday knowing their employees are leaving the office happy and fulfilled, looking forward to coming back to work the next day, instead of living for the weekend. I'm working toward that day when every business leader is so close to his customers, they believe he can read their minds. A day when every business leader understands exactly what her customers are trying to accomplish as she addresses their key struggles, while also making their lives easier, more enjoyable, and more productive. I am committed to the day when every leader can predict their business metrics and customer preferences years in advance with startling accuracy. The key is not to be a great guesser, but to intentionally commit time and attention to a few important long-term decisions and actively manage a system for predicting these metrics and preferences within the business process. The most successful leaders create their future. Barring impactful, unexpected events, I believe this is achievable because I have seen it. Years ago, I took on a consulting client who was looking to sell his business. "Make me look as big as you possibly can," he told me. I created a sales process, hired a team, and within a year the business was purchased by a much larger IT services organization for a good amount of money. Within a few months, the original owner moved on while I stayed to run the division. In my first days as general manager, we suffered a serious hardware issue that resulted in a massive meltdown in services. One of our most critical services, email delivery, ground to a halt. This was before Amazon Web Services, when businesses just rented server space at third-party sites. The company accelerated rehabbing the data infrastructure, but we still lost 1,000 customers in a week. The president of the company and I visited with customers and partners to try and keep them on board. These weren't trivial partners either. They were hundreds of million-dollar, if not billion-dollar partners. By comparison, we were small potatoes. We had to do something drastic if we were going to get our customers back on board. We couldn't just patch it up and hope for the best. I had a vision for the company, and I wanted the network people to see it too. 5 9s, I told them, is what we're shooting for. We need, at a minimum, a 99.999% uptime. I also created a scoring system to gauge our customers' loyalty. This was also before Net Promoter, and the results were not good. 2.9 out of 5, or 58%. I added to the vision. We need a score of 4 out of 5, 80% from our customers. I really wanted 4.5 out of 5, but I didn't want to overwhelm the team at this point. I knew what I wanted to see, but I didn't know how to get there. The network team could figure it out, I believed, but they needed support from leadership. I told them, "You know what I want. You have to build the map to get us there, and tell me what you need to build it." I wanted the team to commit to something they could visualize, something bigger than themselves. I created rewards and recognitions around the 80% goal. We initiated Spark as a way to recognize people, which I'll talk about in a lot more detail later in this book. It took us a while, but 18 months later, when I left the company, we had achieved and maintained a score of 4.6 in customer loyalty, 92%. Even more, at about the 10-month mark, I knew we were going to do great things, as my operating job was over by 11 a.m. each day. I now had time to focus on the future. When I came into the business, it had been around for 7 years and was doing $9 million in revenue. I left it at $14 million. Not bad for 2 years' work, and we did it without hiring a bunch of new people. The key was to have that vision and paint that picture for the people who could make it happen. Then get behind them, support them, and reward them for working together as a team to get there. The goals I set for my team, and the ones I'm asking you to set for yours, aren't a stretch at all. They are totally within reach. I want every leader's team to truly act like a team, each member willing to sacrifice his individual needs for the greater good, each member trusting her fellow team members to do their jobs, and when she's struggling, to have her back. Every single person on every team knowing they can come to work and never have to worry about anyone undermining them, directly or indirectly. If this is the kind of workplace you've already built, then you don't need my book. Feel free to pass it on to a friend. I won't be offended. But if it sounds like something you're longing for, keep reading. Bill, the startup guy. I've been a student of business for 3 decades. In the 1990s, I was a startup guy, working in sales and marketing for new businesses where I talked to customers and partners all day. I loved it. And by 2015, I'd worked with 10 startups that ended with 2 IPOs and 7 acquisitions, achieving a 50% success rate. And 5 out of 6 of these successes were achieved from 1991 through 2011. Being something of an etiologist, I naturally want to know the cause of every effect, specifically as it applies to business and why some succeed, yet many fail. Outside the workplace, I studied everything I could get my hands on from people who ran businesses. People like Jim Collins, Michael Porter, Pat Lencioni, Peter Drucker, and more. Digging deep into what they had to teach me, along with what I had learned on my own, I discovered the reasons most businesses don't last aren't really that complicated, or many, when you get down to it. Once I'd distilled this knowledge down to the basics, I took my skills on the road, helping leaders figure out how to run their businesses in a healthy and thriving way. As a business coach, I've helped leaders fire themselves from the day-to-day so they can focus much more time on the 3 key elements that drive healthy and sustainable growth: team, strategy and execution, and cash. Alan Mulally, arguably the finest CEO in the last 50 to 100 years, wonderfully exemplifies these principles. Mulally helped turn Boeing around in the middle of 9/11, then did the same with Ford during the Great Recession. I am unaware of any business leader who not only survived 2 existential economic crises, but also whose failing businesses came out of these crises even stronger. The book American Icon tells the story of Mulally's strategy at Ford, the 3 key items of team, strategy, execution system, and cash are highlighted. Aggressively restructure to operate profitably at the current demand and changing model mix. Execution. Accelerate development of new products our customers want and value. Strategy. Finance our plan and improve our balance sheet. cash, work together effectively as one team, people and teams. These are the same principles I teach as a business coach. Many leaders and businesses need guidance and support in this respect. To assist more leaders, I took the best of what I know and created a foundation that anyone can apply. The vital steps to take that will move you further, faster, and take the guesswork out of growth. Predicting your company's growth. Business growth happens in stages, and the initial stage eventually slows and begins to decline. This process may take years or longer, but the eventuality is a constant. In order to overcome the decline, the leadership team must figure out the next growth curve as quickly as it is feasible to do so. This process starts by firing yourself from running the company and spending more and more time on predicting the future. Leaders must create space and time to think about what's next. The time it takes to figure this out varies, so you should start as soon as the current business begins to scale. At that point, your job is no longer primarily working in the business, but to spend more time working on the business. The bottom line is that the best leaders focus relentlessly on the following: spending less time managing the present, spending more time predicting the future. An example of a business that successfully predicted growth curves is Apple. Once Steve Jobs righted the ship, after being reinstated as CEO, he and the team began to look for the next big opportunity, which is where the iPod came from. Next was iTunes, followed by the iPhone, and so on. Apple is continuously working on the future. Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos speaks of similar planning, where he and the team are 2 to 3 years ahead of the current quarter. When people have the chance to think, they can easily discern between what's essential and what's not. We need to develop a routine that enables that space to think. In a world where we have so much information, we need more time to think and process it, not less. Greg McKeown, Essentialism. The bottom line is that the best leaders focus relentlessly on the following: spending less time managing the present, spending more time predicting the future. A framework for growth. In today's busier and busier world, you need more time, not less time, to make good decisions. This book will help you get there. There are just a few things you need to do. Look at it as what Shannon Susko calls in her book, The Metronome Effect, a growth framework. The growth framework image illustrates the many facets of this framework, and your job is to do all these things. I'm not going to go into everything you see here. I'm going to pick the few key areas that I've seen get leaders and their businesses the furthest, fastest. Like any good house, every good business has a solid foundation. A firm foundation is a cultural system comprising the leader, the why, the core values, and the North Star. The leader is you. The why is the reason or purpose for your business, and the core values are the rules you live and work by in the business. The immutable behaviors you expect from everyone, every day. The North Star is your company's long-term core destination, which Jim Collins calls the BHAG, or Big, Hairy, Audacious Goal. The foundation rests on good soil, beginning with what business consultant and author Cameron Herold calls your vivid vision. As the leader, it's also your job to clearly communicate the future to your people so they can visualize it in the present. This is the vivid vision. Your people see it and see themselves in it. And then they decide whether they buy into that vision. Not all will, but team members who do will probably be more productive and more likely to rise to the ranks of A-player status. Anyone who doesn't buy into the vivid vision may want to leave the company and find employment at a company whose vivid vision aligns with theirs, and that will allow them to make the impact they want to make in the world. On top of your vivid vision is the change process framework. Change is usually haphazard and often fails. According to a Gallup article by David Leonard and Claude Colty, more than 70% of all change initiatives fail. However, having a managed process like Bottom Line Change, from Ari Weinzweig, founder of Zingerman's Community of Business, to shepherd the change process, allows you to control change and be a change agent instead of allowing change to happen. Then comes the decision-making framework, a managed process for making decisions, and finally, neuroleadership through learning, coaching, and growth. Neuroleadership is understanding how the brain works, how connections are made, how the brain makes decisions, and how people learn. An organization that's growing in terms of revenue, profit, and cash is also growing in terms of its people's skills, capabilities, and knowledge. If you don't know how people learn, you will do what most leaders do, which is to get people in a room, tell them stuff, and send them back to work. That's not how people learn. Get up and stretch, and gray matters. Just reading this book won't make you go further faster. You have to apply the learning. Throughout this book, you'll find sidebars like this one. Get up and stretch exercises with specific instructions for applying the lessons immediately in your business. You'll also find gray matters, which are sidebars about neuroscience as it relates to leadership. In 2019, I completed a certificate with distinction in the foundations of neuroleadership from the Neuroleadership Institute, and I found the material around decision-making, problem-solving, regulating emotions, collaboration, and facilitating change to be very relevant to my work as a coach. I believe you'll find the content in Gray Matters as informative and interesting as I have. When you give advice, there is no opportunity for the person to figure anything out. Instead, you can coach them to come to their own conclusions and allow them space to grow. This method results in knowledge that sticks and results in a better culture and a more cohesive team. You, as the leader, start the business, and then you engage a cohesive team, represented by the walls of the house. Cohesive means that they fight in a healthy way. The right-hand wall is the human system, specifically your A players, who are typically 2 to 3 times more productive than anyone else. A players are key to your success, but they're often ignored because they don't seek nor need attention. They do not need to be managed. They live and breathe the culture and consistently exceed expectations. Other players on the team, especially the ones who complain the most, get the most attention. When a business is in trouble, it's the A players who leave first. They're in demand and can easily move on. Since we've been taking them for granted, they don't feel a need to stay. There is no loyalty and no connection to the business for an A player who has been ignored. Building a strong team requires creating a system where you pay attention to the A players. You challenge them and give them opportunities to stretch their abilities. You also have to treat them like the humans they are by recognizing and rewarding them. You have B-plus players who, with your support and encouragement, could become A players, and you probably have B and C players too. First, focus on the A players and make sure they're challenged. One way to do this is by handing them some of your work. This accomplishes another goal, getting some of the work off your plate so you can think about how to better run the business. Don't give them menial work. Make sure it's work that stretches them and takes the fullest advantage of their strengths. The top of the house is the team and the team leaders. The foundation, walls, and roof create the framework for your house, which is how you run the business on the inside. This is your execution system and your strategic system, which are connected. You start with a strategy, execute it, improve it, and repeat the cycle. Done well, you have the cash to run your business even better. Make strategic bets, pay those A players a little more, and take care of your teams. Gray Matters. A-G-E-S. Ages. According to the Neuroleadership Institute, the human brain remembers and processes information through a system known as A-G-E-S. Ages. Attention, generation, emotion, and spacing. So, to teach someone, you first have to get their attention. You do this by presenting something interesting or compelling, like a fun fact or engaging story. Generation refers to associating what you're teaching them to something that's meaningful to them. When I coach people, I say, here's what we're going to do. I'm going to teach you how to take your business further, faster. That gets their attention. Then I add, if this could happen for you, take a minute to write down the impact that would have on your life. This allows them to decide what's important to them and connect it to what they're going to learn. The next word in the AGES acronym, emotion, is there because we learn better through emotion, whether positive, like love or happiness, or negative, like anger or sadness. We remember things that cause us to be emotional, though we remember the negative more readily than the positive as a function of survival. But any emotional connection we make improves our chances of learning. Spacing is the last part of AGES, which refers to learning over time. Cramming for a test doesn't allow your brain to recall knowledge as well as if you spaced out your learning. This is because when you access the same information regularly, your brain learns that the information is important and stores it in your long-term memory. This is why you can remember lyrics to songs from years ago. In the following pages, we'll start with your people, and more specifically, your teams. Without them, the rest of it won't happen. But before we get into Chapter 1, I've provided a checklist you can use to get a sense of where you and your team believe the company stands right now. The Further Faster checklist gauges each person's opinion on the current status of the business. It also provides insight into which parts of your organization need the most attention, so you can prioritize your actions. After you've completed the checklist, we'll jump right into why performance is a team sport. Get up and stretch. The Further Faster Checklist. Review the Further Faster Checklist that follows before proceeding with this book. Then, give each member of your team a copy of the checklist or put it up on a board in a meeting and complete this simple exercise. Ask each team member to score each of the 10 major items on the list with a score of 1 through 10, denoting the success with which each item is accomplished at your company. A score of 1 means the team member believes the company satisfies that item on the checklist very poorly, while a score of 10 denotes excellence. Once everyone's had a chance to provide their scores, add the scores for each item. Items with the lowest scores should be singled out as needing the most immediate attention from the team. This is a quick and easy exercise that you can complete in a half hour or so. Whether you have each team member record their answers anonymously or openly is up to you. However, have each person fill out their own checklist silently and separately. And remember that each person's impression of how the company is doing is important and deserves your attention. Expect to be surprised. When I do this exercise with leadership teams, it's usually an eye-opener. As leaders, we might think everything's going well simply because we haven't asked if it isn't. But whatever the results, don't be discouraged. Instead, think of this as a starting point for you to measure your business against moving forward. Revisit the checklist regularly and ask your team to rescore it every quarter. You might be just as surprised by the progress that's possible. Resources from this book, including the Further Faster checklist, plus bonus content, are available at Further Faster Resources, https://catalystgrowthadvisors.com/catalyst-growth-advisors/further-faster-resources/. The Further Faster Checklist. 1. Cohesive senior leadership team. Team members understand one another's differences, priorities, and styles. Psychometrics applied. For example, predictive index, DISC. The team participates in ongoing monthly executive education. For example, book, business summit, TED Talk, article. The team meets weekly for strategic thinking. The team fights in a healthy way. The kind truth is shared easily. 2. Vivid vision, core values, and purpose are clear and kept alive. The head of company has written a clear, comprehensive, and compelling vivid vision. All team members are crystal clear on the organization's BHAG, a.k.a. North Star, core destination. A handful of immutable behavioral rules, a.k.a. core values, are created and lived every day. The aforementioned are used to attract, hire, retain, grow, and exit team members. 3. Team-first culture. We have a deliberately designed and supported team-based environment. The right team, with attention paid equally to each prospective member's cultural fit, skills, and knowledge within the team, is thoughtfully considered before building a key functional team and/or working a problem opportunity. Each team is given what they need to succeed. Each team member is put in a position to maximize fit and take the fullest advantage of his/her natural talent and strengths in the role and for the team. All share a common goal, as well as the rewards and responsibilities for goal achievement. Each will readily set aside individual and/or personal needs for the greater good of the group. 4. We have created a psychologically safe environment for all. Each team member feels secure to speak up, admit mistakes, or make errors without fear of scorn and/or ridicule. Each leader feels fully supported. Promises, large and small, are kept by all, and nothing is shared inappropriately. We provide direction versus giving answers. We invite input for clarification and improvement. We create conditions for continued learning to achieve excellence. We value other team members as contributors with crucial knowledge and insight. 5. Key leader strengths and weaknesses are known and being optimally leveraged. Strengths or compensated for. Weaknesses. Each leader completes a love-it-loathe-it process at least twice a year. Each leader has taken and discussed a strengths finder or similar test. Each leader has created and discussed a growth development plan with his/her immediate superior. 6. Strategy execution rhythm, intelligence system, is established and rigorously followed. Scaling up, or similar high-quality system, is established, followed, and measured consistently. The team meets regularly to update and validate the system's components. Every meeting is productive and moves the company forward. 7. Each team member is clear and aligned on key fundamental business processes. Critical decision process framework, change implementation process, consistent neuro-leadership, brain-based learning, growth, and coaching plan that is mutually created, followed, and measured for all team members. Critical decisions process is established and focused on achieving the best possible timely outcome. 8. Suspect to customer to advocate processes are crafted and practiced regularly. Sales playbook is created and leveraged by sales and supporting teams. Weekly sales meeting agenda is created for continuous improvement in growth and forecasting. Customer advocacy playbook is created and leveraged by customer success and supporting teams. Weekly customer feedback meeting agenda is created for continuous improvement in customer delight and business growth. 9. Cash is king. Weekly cash flow statement is provided to head of company. Working capital reserve is available for unexpected business fluctuations, 2 to 12 months, depending on the type of business you are in. Profit channel is established to provide internal funding for future growth, for example, 10 to 15% profit channel. Cash conversion cycle process is completed every 6 months at a minimum. 10. Enterprise value criteria are established and optimized. The entrepreneur, CEO, owner is redundant in the business. Powerful, healthy management team bench is established for key positions. Revenue predictability and quality over several years, consistent growth in revenue, profit, and cash, show significant growth potential in current, adjacent, and/or new markets. Healthy team-based culture, high engagement organization,